Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the Anazal Podcast Network.
Would you risk everything for selling the best chocolate in the world? We are going to talk about this on Systematic Ecology. We are the priests of the geeks, and this is one of our summer drive-in episodes where this year we are specifically focusing on prequel movies. And if you couldn't tell from the description there, that opening logline, we are talking about the 2023 musical comedy Wonka, which is, of course, the Willy Wonka origin prequel movie. So I think this will be a blast. I am one of your hosts, Kevin Schaefer, and I could not do this one without fellow resident movie geek Jill. Jill, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great, and I'm so happy to be talking Willy Wonka.
This one, I remember when we were brainstorming ideas for prequel movies, and we were going through the basics like Star Wars and Furiosa is one of my favorites, and Joshua and I did one on Planet of the Apes, but this one was like, this was actually my first time seeing this one, and I'm excited to talk about that. Now I do have the like fresh kind of out of the theater reaction. Of course I watched it at home, but still. I think was a great pick from you, so I'm really excited to get your thoughts. And before we get started, for listeners out there, you can check out the show notes to see the full series here, because we've been recording this every week over the summer, and so you can check out some of the other movies we talked about. Jill and Christian did one on Prey, which I really liked, the Predator prequel film. That's a great episode, so check them all out in the show notes, and you can also find out ways to support the show, connect with us on Fourth Wall, connect with us on social media, all the good stuff there. So go check out all those links, and all right, well, let's get right into it. So Jill, I want to hear your reaction first. Imagining that you are coming right out of, in this case, the drive-in movie, seeing Wonka for the first time. What is your initial reaction here?
Okay, I am initially saying I'm so excited to see Willy Wonka that doesn't frighten me in the least. This is a delightful movie, full of hope, full of optimism, some great musical numbers, and never once did I feel like I needed to hide behind my mom. Just a great show.
I mean, Taka, as much as I love the 70s film, like we've talked about it, it is one of the most frightening, traumatizing sequences in the entire film, when they're going on that, you know, ride across, and it zooms in on Gene Wilder's face. And I mean, not even talking about the Tim Burton one. That's another thing. But that also frightening too. Yes. But the beloved children's classic from 1971 that nonetheless traumatizes you.
Scary.
Yes. So I fully agree with that assessment of this film, that it is so much more optimistic, hopeful, colorful, just a delightful treat. And it's fitting that this was released around the holidays back in 2023. My reaction, anyway, similar to that, I will say, so like going into this movie, part of the reason I avoided it for so long, it wasn't out of any like despise for it or anything like that. It was just that on the list of movies I didn't really ask for and didn't need, this would probably be toward the top there. I was just like, I don't really need a Willy Wonka prequel. I prefer some ambiguity and mystery there. And I don't know. I just, that's, you know, like some of the, like, I'll give you an example of one that like surprised me that was really good was like the Cruella de Vil origin movie. I love that one. And that was also one I coming in, I was like, do we need this? I don't know. And it surprised me.
Same vein, right?
Yes.
Like an origin story that, yes, we didn't ask for, right, but so delightful.
100%. No, and it was. I mean, I loved the aesthetic, the production design. It is just an overly colorful, optimistic film that, I will say there are darker elements here, but it doesn't really zero in on that. It came out of it just like, hey, this was a fun, I know we're watching this during the summer, but this is definitely a good holiday movie, especially. Very cozy, very atmospheric. And feels like the kind of musical comedy that you would take your family to around the holidays for like a matinee. So very much enjoyed that. What are some other thinking about this film? Like, did you see it when it came out, or like what was your were you kind of excited or kind of like indifferent to it coming in?
I was very skeptical, so I'll just be upfront. I'm not a huge Timothée Chalamet fan. I wasn't when the movie came out. I'm not a hater by any means, but I'm just not like one of the super fans. And I was very skeptical, but always looking for family-friendly movies that I can take my kids and, you know, various other children to. So we went to see this around the holidays when it came out, and I just loved it. I love that you don't necessarily get, like when I say it's optimistic and it's hopeful, yes, but you also have these like darker elements, like they're all working in a laundry, which is basically slave labor because they're poor. And I like that you kind of get a glimpse into that part of society. You know, I love any story that happens in the margins, and these are marginalized people that come together and form a community and help out each other, like for the greater good.
No, absolutely. Like right from the get-go, it, you know, I said in the intro question, like, oh, would you risk everything? Because at the beginning of this movie, yeah, Willy Wonka just comes to this town that I like that the town is kind of an amalgamation of influences. Like it's a little bit of Paris, it's a little bit of London. Yeah. You know, they kind of don't really define exactly where it is, but it has a mix of European influences. Mm-hmm. But it's this big town. He has no money. He just wants to sell chocolate. And
it's a dream.
He's a dreamer. And, you know, immediately gets caught. And as you said, has to work in the laundry room with all these other misfits. And then he kind of forms a bond there. And, you know, from there, the plot moves along. There's a corrupt police. There's a Slugworth is there running the town. Actually, while we're talking about this, I'd say one of the things I liked most about this movie is that while I was watching, I wasn't even thinking about really the novel or the 70s movie that much, because it was, while there were certainly references and Easter eggs, I liked that this was a prequel movie that was very self-contained and just wanting to tell its own story. Because, like, to give you a counter example there, I still enjoy Solo, for instance. Like, it's a fun movie, but that one feels like a checklist of, oh, these are the things we have to cover in a Han Solo origin movie. Like, how did he get his blaster? How did he get his name? How do you meet Chewie? How do you meet Lando? Like, I mean, it's still fun and entertaining, but well, I was very much...
And how did he get
much,
the Millennium Falcon?
Yes, and how do you get the Falcon? Like, all of these things where it's like, oh, this has to line up exactly with New Hope and everything afterwards. Whereas this one, it was inspired by the source material, but not necessarily beholden to it. So I liked how all of that was there. Like, I mean, yes, you have a rendition of pure imagination, and that's kind of embedded into the score throughout. But other than that, and other than, you know, obviously the name and some of the candies, it had fun playing with its own world, its own story. It's a bit, I mean, again, pretty like straightforward narrative of You know, he connects with this orphan who they almost form like a Batman and Robin kind of pair. Yes. Like they just kind of Noodle is just I love the character, I love the name. And you know, she's both of them are kind of just, you know, have like mysteries about their past, and she's trying to ultimately reunite with her mom, and you know, and then it's revealed later that she's related to Slugworth, who was handed her when she was a baby, and then abandoned her. And I like, again, very much darker element there, but still gives a little comedic take to it, because it's like he, you know, throws her down the laundromat, and it's like, you know, but you also recognize that this is not a realistic story. Like it draws on those themes, and
it's still fantastical.
Yes, very fantastical, very over the top. And I like how it maintains that tone throughout. So yeah.
And while you said like you don't need the novel, you don't need Willy Wonka to make this a whole, you know, series, it's kind of sweet. Like I read the book many times because I was a kindergarten teacher for a lot of years.
Oh wow, yeah.
And then for my own children, this was like Roald Dahl was one of our favorites, and I read it all Roald Dahl movies over and over and over to my children. And it sticks to that very like fantastical, whimsical, we're not shying away from the sad parts of life, but there's always something like, wow, there's a man eating chocolate and now he's floating in the sky. I love that. I want to believe that anything is possible.
No, absolutely. That tone and the way it's maintained, and the production design and the costumes and everything. Like I was reading one review that was like, it almost didn't need this level of commitment to it because like it is ultimately like a whimsical family comedy. But I do love that they commit on all of those elements. Now, I will say, since you brought up Timothée Chalamet, I like him in a lot of things, and I thought he was still good here overall, but I have to say, I do think he was miscast here, and I think there are stronger actors that, like, not to say that he's a bad actor, like, I love him in Dune, I love him in Marty Supreme, I don't think this maybe was the best pick for him, that's just personally, I was watching it, and I don't know, and it wasn't so much of, like, comparing it to Gene Wilder or anything like that, but I was just watching and thinking someone like Mike Feist, for instance, I think would have been really good for mm-hmm. West Side Story. I think, I think even, I know he's older, but he also has like an eternally youthful face. I think Andrew Garfield would have killed it. I inevitably did have like others who I would have preferred. That's not to say he did a bad job. I just don't think it was like as good a role as some of his others.
So I'm not very good at like fan casting, but I kind of like this idea of like, who else would you put? I feel like maybe you and I should explore this a little more in our other movies that we talk about. Like, what are some other possible casting options? Because I like that. I kind of like an Andrew Garfield Wonka. Okay.
And especially because like that, this was what, 2023. So it was like just a little bit after Tick, Tick, Boom, which I talked to you last time when we were doing our Spielberg episode, one of my all time favorite movies. And like, I can't believe he hasn't done another musical since then. So I'm just like, put him in more, give him like the role he needs there. But yeah, that's just a personal preference there. I really love the rest of the supporting cast though. Like at the end, I mean, Keegan-Michael Key, perfect as the like, corrupt police officer, who's also like so dimwitted and everything. That was great. You know, it's popular, Olivia Colman. And then of course, you know, I know there were like, it was a lot of jokes when the movie came out, when you see Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa. And I was still laughing at it too. I'm like, 90s and early 2000s rom-com lead is now a CG Oompa Loompa. I'm like, okay, that happens. But yeah,
wasn't it brilliant how serious he is as Oompa Loompa. I mean, you talk about committing to the whole theme, but he was so committed to his role and he was so serious. It was perfect.
There was nothing phoned in about it whatsoever. I mean, like, and especially because like, you know, looking at, for instance, like the 70s movie, like they hint at some of the Oompa Loompa mythology and all that. And I feel like both his performance and then that brief like flashback scene with his origin kind of really did give you just enough to know about that world and where they come from. He committed even with a CG performance, like, you know, his mannerisms, his facial expressions, his vocality, all of that is really extraordinary.
Actually, his performance was probably my favorite in the movie.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I loved it. And I loved Noodle too.
Yeah. I was about to say, Kim and Noodle are really the best. And then, and I loved too at the end, her mom was the, I don't know if you watched The Pit, but that was the doctor in season one. So I was like, yes, yeah, yeah. But, so that was great. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a very delightful movie from start to finish. It just, you know, it's whimsical. It's wonderful. Is there anything else about, like, thematically? I know we touched on a little bit, but about the relationship between poor and working classes and then the elite. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, while I don't know that it says anything like profound, but that's certainly, you know, the main theme throughout the movie.
Well, I think it's always a good reminder that in any society, like who might appear to be the good guys and the bad guys is probably not exactly how it is. And that, you know, it's a cartel, right? It's basically a chocolate cartel that's running the town and he comes to disrupt it and ultimately wins, where like, maybe we should look at in real life, that probably doesn't happen as much as we would like. The little guy gets squashed and actually the cartel or the corrupt police people or the corrupt people who make the laws end up winning. But it is nice to root for the underdog. And I think it's really good, especially as Americans, when we watch movies like this, to remember that we root for the underdog on screen. So it's probably good to take those same passionate feelings and maybe root for the underdog in real life too, right?
I agree. And I'm always a little baffled by people who are fans of this kind of stuff, but their, let's just say, their political views and their, you know, what they say in real life very much contradicts that notion. So I fully agree with you.
And then I think always the question, well, we can talk more theme if you like. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, feel free. Whatever you want to touch on here. Yeah.
The question I was going to ask, and I think we should ask this of all prequels, is does it make the original better?
Good question. Good question. So, I mean, it's another one where I think both movies stand on their own so well, mm-hmm. and that's a good thing. So, but at the same time, like, because I mean, I'd love, you know, I mean, of course, I grew up on the 71 original, yeah. And you know, I could quote that endlessly. I think it does add a layer to the character, especially with, like, we didn't even talk about the relationship with his mom. And the only thing is I wanted to see a little more of that because I love Sally Hawkins, and that would have been cool to see. But when you see, like, where all the motivation comes from, where all the eccentricity comes from, where the, you know, looking out for the little guy, all of that makes sense. So I think it does. It does nothing to strip away from the original, but it also does, I think, add another layer to it as well. But again, I just like that this one just stands on its own so well. And it's, I wasn't ever thinking about like, oh, how does this gonna pave the way? And there's still really a lot. I mean, at the end of the movie, yeah, he started to form, you know, the basis of the factory, but it's not fully formed or anything like that. This is really just like the beginning. There's still, like, you know, a long period of time in between the right. end of this movie and then the start of Willy Wonka right. and Charlie Bucket and all that.
Yeah, because when we meet Willy Wonka in the 1970s movie, he's an old man and right, he's like right. ready to retire and pass on the factory. And right. then Wonka in the movie Wonka is a teenager, right? Yeah, like young yeah. adult. So yeah. there's so much that happens in between. And this answers like a little bit of his mystery yeah. because I will say Willy Wonka is a very mysterious character.
Very. Right? And, like,
so many questions.
Yes. And I'm really glad that they didn't try to answer everything. They still leave a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
I agree. And I still would like love to kind of know like what took him from this optimistic person who works with others well and uses others, right, to achieve his goals and seems like team oriented and team minded to this like recluse in Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
That is just like him and the Oompa Loompas and doesn't trust anybody and is all by yeah. himself. And like, what was that journey like? We don't get yeah. answers to that. But I do think this does make the original better. I think it's that mother mm-hmm. theme that you talked about a little bit before. Mm-hmm. We know his mom is the first one that gave him a recipe for chocolate mm-hmm. and put the idea in his head that He can do anything he wants.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, to your point there, I'm just going to say that capitalism just, you know, a war on him after a while. To, you know, I don't know. But it is fascinating to see. Like, I mean, he's so optimistic throughout. And there really isn't. I guess that's about the only thing is, like, I don't know that he really changes a ton from the start of this movie to the end. Like, he's pretty optimistic throughout. I mean, he has to overcome stuff and all that. But he really is, like, over the course of this movie, kind of the same character. So that was interesting too. That there's not necessarily a lot of like development, and we don't really see the tenets of that older reclusive character start to form here.
And he's mean. Like, let's just be honest. Sure, like Willy Wonka in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is mean. Like, he's manipulating children.
Yeah.
He's kind of torturing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And tricking them to find out who's worthy, like that Wonka's not present. And so, like, what happened?
It's like you see him as like he definitely knows how to play tricks on people and how to be a man. But it's more, it's so lighthearted here. He's never really doing anything overly manipulative or like trying to control people. Like, if anything, he's like looking out for little people, and you know, he's using magic tricks and stuff to fool the bad guys. So that it really is interesting. And again, I like that, you know, maybe they'll make Wonka 2 to explore the gap years. Actually, I hope maybe. Not. But
we don't need it.
It's Hollywood. it's Hollywood. Yeah. But and I would love for Paul King to do like more musicals. I mean, I know he did Paddington and stuff, but this just felt like this fresh, like, again, like holiday type musical comedy that they don't make a lot of these days. So I would love for him to tackle something else, either another role doll or like, I don't know, well, what he would want to do next. But I could definitely see him tackling another musical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of my favorite role dolls. Fantastic Mr. Fox, I don't think could ever be done as a live action.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It's there. And Wes Anderson already. Yeah.
The Twits, maybe.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. And I mean, they made the BFG like that Spielberg did years ago, but it wasn't. No, I know that was kind of a misfire. So I wouldn't, you know, maybe a reinterpretation there. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So I mean, overall, this was one. Yeah, again, I had like put off for a long time, and I quite enjoyed it. So I mean, is there anything else you want to say on either the movie or, its relation to some of the other big prequels out there?
No, other than I recommend it. I think if you just want a movie that's you can get lost in and not going to make you think too hard. Yeah. And there's some great musical numbers. I don't think any of them are outstanding. They're not unforgettable, but it's good. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The thing on this one is like, watch your blood sugar, because it's going to very much tempt you to consume chocolate water. And you're in that position as me, like, and you got to be careful, because the temptation is there for 2 hours straight.
Okay. Do you have a real sweet tooth, Kevin?
Not, but like, I'm diabetic, so I have to like be careful. So like, I don't even like eat that much, but when you're thrown at like for 2 hours straight, it's a little hard to not. I would not recommend having a large, you know, portion of chocolate near you while watching this.
Okay.
Unless you're ready for that, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Fair warning.
Yes. Right. Well, and speaking of that, so I know, Jill, we've answered this question already on previous drive-in episodes, but we could change it to, I know it was the tea or lemonade question before, but like we could answer that again or talk about an alternative drink or snack you bring to the drive-in theater.
Well, I actually do think you need to consume chocolate watching absolutely. This movie. Yes. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I love like gummy candies are kind of my thing now. And recently I discovered at my grocery store, like I have a Sprouts grocer that's near me. I know they're not everywhere in the country, but they're very big on the West Coast.
Yeah.
And they have chocolate covered gummy bears. So that's what I'm bringing to this drive-in.
That's delicious. Mm-hmm. I think I would bring a Hershey's cookies and cream bar. Those are delicious.
You a white chocolate?
Yeah. Okay. I like that brand specifically. It's just like, it's so good. Yeah.
You're inspiring me. So first of all, I need to say you inspire me all the time. I'm always impressed that you know, like, the directors of every movie, and then you always give such an interesting, like, perspective into a movie because of your knowledge of the directors. That makes me think of that a lot more. And then also now in your snack choices, because I don't love white chocolate, so I've never tried Hershey's cookies and cream.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's a very specific kind, but I don't know when they came out with that. But I treat myself every now and then, that's usually what I go to.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Jill, this was a blast, and thank you to our listeners out there. Go check out the rest of the series. We're having a blast doing this one, and feel free to send any recommendations to us as well.
Please.
Awesome. And go eat chocolate and enjoy yourself. Yeah.
Thank you.
Take care.
Hello there, listener. This is Evan Garcia, and I just wanted to jump in here to remind you and to let you know of our Facebook groups and our Discord server. These are great communities where you can post and share memes and talk with the hosts, and we have votes and some polls for future episode topics and fun interactions with our host. So just wanted to remind you that we are focused on community with you listeners, and we love each and every one of you guys listening. Thank you guys.
Hello friends, this is Andy Walsh. Thanks for listening. If you're going to be a systematic geek about this podcast, you need to know that it's part of the Anado Podcast Network. Other shows in the network include the Whole Church Podcast, where Joshua Knoll and TJ Blackwell spent over 7 years now in pursuit of church unity through education and conversations with leaders across divisions. 7 years, that's a podcast that has lost some baby teeth. My Seminary Life with Brandon Knight, where he began discussing what he learned as a seminary student and is now learning with the listeners in a continuing lifelong education. The Bible After Hours with the Foul-Mouthed Preacher, where he critically examines the modern church through satire, then provides a more progressive reading of scripture. And The Homily with Pastor Chill Will from Chapel Hill, where Will Rose's homilies are periodically updated and made available through the podcast, always reminding us that we are loved with a love deeper than words. Thanks again for listening, and remember, if you're going to geek, do it systematically.